With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
Koi keles puk lord, koi puk be puhu, yo bo ma bo jesu vwi, se mo chumeu. Welcome back. That was a special treat for everyone to open this episode of the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, a little bit of the Klingon Warriors anthem, because today we're going to be reviewing the episode that made that anthem canon, Deep Space Nine's Soldiers of the Empire from the fifth season. Very heavily Klingon-based episode. Don't worry, we'll get there, but we have the usual bits and pieces to get to first. But yeah, very important episode. But I am your usual host, Mike Wilson, and I am just here with one guest today, someone that had to jump in last minute, so we thank her very much, and we welcome Adrienne back to the podcast. Welcome.
Ba-da-dee, ba-ba-bee, ba-mak-o. Here I am. I love that song. It's the best. I'm so glad you sing it. Yay.
You appreciate my little Klingon singing rendition then?
Yes, I appreciate it. Yep. Oh, it's awesome. Hello and hello.
Yeah, you'll have heard Adrienne on the podcast and on our Silver Screen podcast before. She had to jump in last minute because we had a scheduling snafu and, you know, various things going on. But I did want her to look at this episode, and this is the last episode before we go on a little wee break. Don't worry, we broke the season into two halves this year to try and get everything done with this and the Silver Screen podcast. I am hoping to get together a top 10 that will air in between, and the break will only be a matter of, I think, 4 or 5 weeks before we start part two and jump into some more Klingon episodes and finish with a movie as usual. So fear not, we will return, but this is going to be your last one for now. This is episode 6 of the season. So yeah, I wanted to make sure we had plenty to talk about. If you are new here, the podcast, as I always say, breaks down into sections. We basically do a little getting to know you. We do the famous hit or miss section, and then we jump into the review of the episode in question, which I've already said is this week is going to be Deep Space Nine's Soldiers of the Empire. So I have Adrienne here as a guest. So Adrienne, you have been on before, is that right, on this podcast?
I have been here. Yes, it's a welcoming place. Yes.
Awesome. So we have already been through your sort of your journey to Star Trek, what drew you to it, and your favorite kind of episodes and things. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we know, if anybody's been listening, you guys know that Deep Space Nine is my favorite show just because of the complexity of the characters and et cetera. I like all of them. I've just recently caught up last night with all the Strange New World episodes, and I'm ready to go. Star Trek is always in my brain.
Awesome. Well, I won't be asking you those questions, but I will jump into the... I do have a little tiny bit of a debrief to do, so I will jump into the section that I call Hailing Frequencies Open.
Hailing Frequencies Open, sir.
There we go. And I'll cue cue the little sound bite. So, as I say, Adrian, we've asked you all of the kind of the big questions the last time you were on, but I was going to ask, and you already touched upon it, because we're in the midst of kind of new Star Trek airing. Had you been watching it? And you said you're all caught up with Strange New Worlds now.
Yeah, actually, I got caught up last night because I was feeling like I was out of the loop. So I watched them all last night, and yeah, I'm liking it. I like the show. I just... Cool. One thing I like about the show, actually, because I usually listen, I'm doing a million things, so I'm listening on my phone app, and just the music is great, the background music. I mean, it doesn't really, when you're watching it, you're watching what your characters do, but, you know, I just love to listen to it, and I get to hear all that stuff.
Yeah, Nami Melamed, I think, is the composer for Strange New Worlds and for Prodigy, and fantastic work.
Yes.
Awesome songs and things. Yeah, definitely. So without giving too much away, because we will probably be reviewing these episodes at some point. I know we definitely do have one of the season two episodes that we're going to be looking at in depth soon. How are you finding the season after three episodes at time of recording?
I'm liking it. I really loved the show about Una, like her Illyrian background. Yes. I just love that. I've only seen it once, and so far that's the only one I want to rewatch from the season two so far. I want to do a deep dive into that one and just watch the whole thing. Her lawyer is incredible, and they were childhood. They knew each other, and it's just me trying not to spoil everything.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that. I feel really guilty because I can't remember the name of that actress, and she was fantastic.
Oh, wasn't she?
Performances where you're like, wow, she's coming as a guest star, and she absolutely crushed it. And I really hope this doesn't prevent her from coming back somehow in a different role or in a recurring role, because she was so good.
Oh, wasn't she? Yeah. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh, please, can she come back sometime? Please, because she stole every scene. Like, I couldn't look anywhere else except her. That's how I know, like, someone's such a great actor.
Yeah. And when you literally are coming in with the viewpoint of, like, I hate Starfleet to a Star Trek show, and you still leave thinking, I don't care, I love you.
Yeah, you're amazing. You hate everything I'm about, but you're still amazing.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Awesome. That's fair enough. Yeah, that's cool. That's fair enough then. And so the other kind of, the only sort of big question that I have that I wouldn't have necessarily asked you is related to the sort of theme that we're carrying on for this season. So it would be, do you have any favorite Klingon themed episodes or stories, like story arcs or characters, anything you'd like to shout out as being a particular favorite to do with the Klingons?
Oh, geez. Well, okay. I love Lursa and Bator. Okay. That's just true, because they're so, they're just... They're just everything you didn't ever think you'd see in Star Trek. There they are. I love them. I love Martok. I love everything he's been through. He's my guy. I love his whole storyline of being imprisoned and losing his eye there. And of course, you know, I love those episodes. But I'd say that. I mean, everybody loves Worf. It's easy to love Worf. I think.
Well, everybody except Lady Vian, apparently.
Right. Exactly. So refreshing. But I'm just going to put out the rest of the world. You know, you know. Worf. You love him. He's a great character. He brings so much to it. But I think Martok has that grit. Mm. So I like him.
Yeah. It's weird you gave those answers, because we talked, obviously, in the Redemption review, we talked in depth about the Duras sisters, and we were all in awe. We all thought they were fantastic characters, so we agree. And even Vian, who's not a fan of the Klingons, was like, she loved Martok, because she loved his relationship, like his devotion to his wife that you see on a couple of occasions.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Yeah.
I love that, because he just loves her. And of course, like, we meet his son. But, you know, he doesn't come back into it. But we meet Drex, you know, in the Way of the Warrior, son of Martok. And he's, I mean, it's a family. And anyone who listens to this know I love all the little Star Trek families. So, yeah. Awesome.
And we'll get into the rest of it later, because obviously this is, we did talk briefly about, again, harking back to the Redemption review, we talked about how there are lots of different kinds of relationships and love relationships in Star Trek. And I think it was Jeff who said one of his favorite love relationships was Worf and Martok. And it doesn't have to mean, you know, queer-coded or romantic relationships. It's just there's clearly a really strong bond there. And I was thinking of that a lot when I was writing the notes for this episode, because I was like, yeah, this episode is where you really get the point of what Jeff was saying in that one, and kind of the relationship between the two of them. And yeah,
really
won't spoil it here, but...
Right. You really do. That's true. I'm another Klingon that I really like is, although she's only around for a bit, is Grilka.
Oh, yeah. She only did like two episodes, but she was really good. Yeah.
So great. I mean, a lot of people don't like it when Quark has love relations and all that stuff, and he has these funny situations, but I just liked them together a lot. I mean, you need the humor. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I thought it was good. And I thought that was doing well. I mean, not all of the Ferengi storylines are, but yeah. I really liked that one, the whole House of Quark and
House of Quark
coming into it.
Yeah, I like Grilka. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's fair enough. I did want, just briefly, before we jump into the hit or miss section, I did want to touch on the whole situation currently with Star Trek Prodigy, just to touch base, because I did already talk about it in a previous episode, which will now be a couple of weeks old. I'm sort of hoping that by the time this is edited and goes out, that this might be redundant, but I'm also, you know, not optimistic as much as I would like to be. So I just wanted to let everyone know, obviously you know the situation with Prodigy, Adrian, I'd have to fill you in.
Oh, you don't. Although your Discord shocking thing was the first thing that informed me about it.
Same with me, because Toby had posted, oh, I can't believe all these streaming shows cancelling things, and it had a list. The article listed like the three Paramount Plus shows, and I saw Prodigy on there, and my heart just sank. I was like, what? And then to find out it was deleted and everything. So suffice to say, we are still on the campaign trail to try and save Prodigy. So do keep, if you are, please use the hashtag Save Star Trek Prodigy. Do always keep hashtagging the show itself. Do keep rewatching if you can, if you have access to the first half of season one on Blu-ray or DVD. I do know that they are selling the season digitally on all of the major platforms like Google Play, YouTube, Amazon, etc. So I did actually purchase the entire season digitally. I don't trust digital, but I trust it more than waiting for Paramount Plus to put the show back on. So So at least I have the first half season on physical media with the second half not out yet. I wanted to make sure I at least had them there to watch. So I've done that as well. I'm not saying you have to, but if you wanted to, the option is there. And do keep checking. Do keep, you know, buying. If you're in the US, I think a lot of the toys are on sale now. Can't really get them over here in the UK, but buy the toys, buy the books. Let Paramount know that you are interested. Go on the Paramount store or the Star Trek store. Look for Prodigy merchandise. And just keep the fires burning. We're hopeful that something's going to happen. All of the showrunners are kind of saying they can't say much, but they're cautiously optimistic it'll get at least that second season that's being produced picked up to air somewhere. So fingers crossed that happens and that we actually get a physical release of what's there as well. So
absolutely.
As I said, I will leave the link to the petition that I also shared last time in the episode description. If you haven't signed that, just sign it just to let Paramount know, you know, there are fans of the show out there. They seem to think that there wasn't and they could just delete it. And we want to let them know at least that, you know, people are there that care. And
yeah, we're here.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of people are fans of the show. similarly, if you did want to take some more action, I have found out there is another way. If you have access to email, you can email the address investorrelations@viacbs.com. That's all one word, no spaces or anything. I'll, again, leave it in the description. And just let them know, you know, that you're not happy about it. You're not going to be subscribing to their service and paying them. It's a loss of money and of earnings for them, and it was a poor decision. So, we don't want to, you know, take a harassing tone or anything like that, but let's just let them know our love for the show and that, we're not paying for things to be deleted from your service.
That's right.
And again, there's a lot of choice and a lot of services out there. And I do know one of the people that had emailed had actually sort of posted to say, as an idea of what to say, you could try something like this. And they'd said, look, I've cancelled Netflix. I've cancelled, you know, these others, Prime Video or Apple TV. There's so many streaming services. Paramount Plus, the one thing that kind of was the lure for him was Star Trek. And if they're going to start deleting it, then why pay? So yeah, it doesn't seem smart, but anyway, we'll leave that there for this week because it's not a particularly pleasant thing to think about.
No, it isn't.
And we are going to move on into our next section, which is Adrian's favourite section, the one that gives the podcast its name, the infamous hit or miss section.
What about my performance?
I'm not a drama critic.
Before we start hit or miss, may I ask you one question about your Avi?
Sure, yeah.
Is that Gach in your hand?
It is Gach in my hand.
Very fresh.
I'm pleased you mentioned that because I never think to mention it, and I want to shout it out in the episode. It's actually, I don't know her kind of official, you know, real name, but it's a person called Marcy Starfleet who does her own kind of art and stuff. Yes. And she created her own site where you basically create your own little Star Trek avatars, and you can customize it any way you like with any items, and you know, almost all of the uniforms, little things like Gak and the Klingon Baldricks, and you know, bottles of wine and cool backgrounds and stuff. So I'll leave a link to her. Site if you want to go and make your own, just make sure that you do credit her. Awesome. I really appreciate that because it's what I've been using this season, and all I've been doing is kind of subtly changing the uniform. So if you haven't noticed in the background, now Adrienne has blown it for you. After six episodes, if you haven't noticed, though, you probably should have by now that I always match it to whichever series we're reviewing. Yeah. So I'm currently wearing a DS9 uniform, if you can see it hidden in there. So.
Oh, I see the uniform, but it could be. I'm just making sure it's Gach and not like some modern blue hat corner of a tribble, you know. I'm just making sure it's actual Gach.
There is the option to have tribbles in your hand on there as well.
This is so much
all
better.
Kinds of things. Right, yeah. Okay. I had to go with the clip.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody. Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
One thing, I was like, I'm going to put the Klingon Baldrick over the uniform and I'm going to be holding a plate of Gach.
Well, you're there.
It was either that or try and look for, you know, I was looking for something that approximated blood wine, but it looked like either, you know, just human wine or Romulan ale. And I was like, that's Klingons would never.
Never. Horrible.
So anyway, I know that you've said before you kind of dread the hit or miss section. So do stay calm, Adrian. If you're new to the podcast or you're just a little bit unsure, the hit or miss section is basically where I pick a number of things just completely at random, without letting the guest or anyone know in advance. I pick them, put them up on the screen, shout them out, and then we ask our guests if they think it's a hit or a miss. I give my opinion. We try and come to a consensus either way, and we move on. This week, I have 7 on deck because it's a slightly shorter episode that we're reviewing, so we'll see if we get to them all, depending how long we're discussing and debating. Right. So, Adrienne, are you ready for the first one?
I am standing by to feel silly.
Bear with, because I'm just getting the image to pop up on YouTube, because it's always good to have visual aids. And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, you can see as well. Sometimes we need our memory jogged when it comes to certain episodes or themes or something. So, yeah, the first thing then on our list for today. Oh, I should have said, by the way, I always forget to say this. I do kind of drop in things that are related to the theme that we're doing now that we're doing theme series. So you will see a few Klingon related things popping up in here. But not entirely, because I didn't want it to just overtake the hit or miss section. So there'll be some that will be relevant, but not all of them, because the first thing here isn't particularly Klingon related or at all. It's a ship. And I want to know your thoughts, Adrienne, on the Andorian battlecruiser Kumari. Is it a hit or a miss? And there it is.
Well, I like the Andorians. I just don't know much about the Kumari. So do tell.
The Kumari is the flagship, and it's basically the ship that Shran is in command of throughout Enterprise.
Shran. I like Shran.
I mean, there's nothing special about it in terms of it looks like every other Andorian battlecruiser, but I just particularly wanted to shout that out because it's Jeffrey Combs' ship.
I love him. But doesn't it look like a pair of clippers with all the attachments? Like it's a hair clipper, word. Right? With all the attachments over the side. Just checking.
We've had a Klingon bird of prey that looked like the Winnebago from Spaceballs, and now you've got an Andorian ship that looks like this.
I'm just checking. Because, you know, like Razor, modern day. Okay.
I can't say I've seen that. I love the design personally because it just looks, I don't know why, it looks suitably spaceshipy.
Yeah.
It's it's got that weird kind of like aerodynamic, even though there's no reason for it to look aerodynamic in space. It just looks cool. And it's just, it does the thing which you kind of want, which is it's instantly recognizable, which you kind of need for one of the key Starfleet Federation species, you know?
Actually, you really do need stuff that is completely different. There's no way you're going to confuse it with something else, especially in a Star Trek world. So, yeah. It's a hit it's Jeffrey Combs is part of this. So I love him. If he's involved, it's clearly a hit.
Well, yeah. So, yeah. No, I think it's good. Every time I've seen it, it stands out as being what it is, because it's appeared in like Lower Decks and things, and you can always kind of point to it and go, that's an Andorian ship, and I recognize that it is, which is always a good a good sign. You always want that lineage. You want to be able to know, you know, that's a Vulcan ship, that's an Andorian, mm-hmm. that's a Starfleet ship, obviously.
Agreed.
So,
agreed,
I just think it's cool. Plus I can in terms of what happens on screen, I just love when it kind of comes in last minute to save Enterprise and help them to combat the Zindi weapon at the end of season three.
I love the Zindi. I wish they did more Zindi stuff, but that's just me. I like that whole thing.
We did briefly see a very weird looking Zindi insectoid in the future in Star Trek Discovery, but yeah. All we know is that they're on friendly terms.
That's a plus, so. Yeah.
Which I guess, yeah, considering what happened, that's all right. So, yeah, I think we're both going to say the Kumari or just general Andorian battlecruisers are a hit. So that was relatively painless, hopefully for you. So we're going to move on to the second thing then for this week, if I can find it. The second thing is going to be Klingon related. It's a character from Discovery, and it is the character of Laurel, played by Mary Chifo, the mother of Klingons herself. Would you say she's a hit or a miss?
I definitely think that she's a hit. I like her. I like her character. I like the strength. I know the whole thing about, you know, the baby and everything was fascinating, and her love for him. But I will just say this. I didn't really like how the whole Klingon thing was so graphic in Discovery. Mm. I mean, I know it's important and I love the Klingons, but the graphicness was kind of a little bit heavy for me.
I would probably have agreed with you on that one. I would say the same kind of thing, in that I think Laurel is a hit now, but I think she grew to be better in the second season. The first season was very, as you said, it was too severe. It was almost monstrous. It got really intense, you know, without getting into too much about kind of abuse and everything. And I just didn't even like the design of her in the first season. They kind of went out of their way to make her look monstrous with the sort of engorged, you know, head and weird lack of hair and everything. And yeah, so even the design that you can see on screen, if you're watching, I think is the season two design, where she looks just way more traditionally next gen Klingon. And I think it suits the character. I think it helps Mary's performance. Not that she's ever bad, even in the first season when I don't necessarily agree with the way that the plot takes it. I think she's fantastic throughout, but I grew to love Laurel more thanks to, like I said, the way that it developed into that second season and when it, you know, when Discovery toned a lot of stuff down, shall we say. So,
they took a softer tone with her, and we needed that.
We did. We absolutely did, especially when she's kind of, you know, she's the, for all we know, it's like the first kind of High Chancellor that we've ever really chronologically seen. So we needed some kind of indication. And yeah, they did go out of their way to be like, yeah, she's going to unify them. She's going to make them have all one type of ship. She's on friendlier terms with everyone. Mm-hmm, yeah, I think I appreciate that. So I'm going to say hit, but again, just grew to a hit, shall we say.
Yeah, she's a hit for sure. But I mean, her acting is great. It always was great, but just like when you think of the very first Discovery episode with the Klingons, the first few episodes there, is so much better.
We kind of did talk about that. I forget why it came up, but I think it was just a couple of episodes ago. We said, like, at the start, the way they represented the Klingons was a little bit too far, a bit too over the top, too much monstrousness, cannibalism, and, you know, it kind of got silly. But I think they realized their mistake, and you know, a lot of the humanization, for want of a better word, I think is down to Mary's performance, because she was fantastic throughout.
Yes. So, because we need to care. We need to have some sense of attachment with them. You know, she had to be a little more human.
Absolutely.
Well, don't tell her that, though. Don't tell her I said that.
No, a bit more Klingon we need. yeah, it was hard to attach to Volk because he didn't even know who he was, so it was hard for us to get a grasp on it. So, anyway, sticking
he had a hard life.
He did indeed. Sticking with the dual themes of Klingons and Discovery, the next thing is a ship. So hit or miss, Adrienne, for the Klingon Cleave ship that we see in Discovery. There we are.
Okay. This ship definitely had a purpose. I forgot it was called a Cleave ship, so thank you for saying that. But I think it's badass. I mean, because when you first see it, you don't know what the heck is happening. I mean, it's really shocking, a shocking visual. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it looks like something that would have been around for the Barge of the Dead. If you're looking at it right now, it looks like a dead space creature, but you know, clearly it's Klingon. I mean, it has the Batleth kind of, or the Mechleth kind of blade, but it's a ship and it will cut a ship in half. And it's cloaked. I mean, what is not to love? How do I not have one of these for traffic in Los Angeles, right? I need one of
these. Oh, can you imagine? There'd be a few Ford Tauruses being sliced off.
There would be.
Awesome. Oh. Yeah, I love this ship. And it's one of very few Klingon ships from Discovery that I do love, because I didn't like the way they were all so disparate and so completely different and didn't look Klingon at all until they kind of reintroduced the D7. But this one I love because I just remember in that first, it's either episode 1 or 2 during the Battle of the Binary Stars, as you said, when you're out of nowhere, you're finally able to focus on something and you see the Europa, the flagship, just, you know, flying through space happily. And then this thing decloaks and it's already kind of wedged halfway through before you know what's happening. And you're just like, what the heck is going on?
I forgot it was the Europa. I mean, the visual is just so stunning. If you see it happening, you know that something, it has hit something cloaked, but you just don't know that that's the purpose of this darn thing.
Yeah. So I was already kind of on board with it from that, because like you said, the way that it's presented is just like epic and huge. Yeah. It's a huge ship and you only really see the actual Cleave part going through, because it looks like a gigantic space blade or something. But what really sold me on it was the very end of Discovery season 2, where, as I've said, we've made friends, we're kind of allied a bit now, but we've already introduced the D7, so we've seen that's kind of come to the rescue, and they're fighting against Section 31 and everything, and then this thing again just decloaks and starts slicing through, and then Laurel just heals like, I've come to help you, maybe today is a good day to die. I'm like, yes, you brought the best shit. Let's just cut the crap out of these Section 31.
Laurel, she's like, hey, I'm fun at parties, just make sure I get the invite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I was like, right, serious. That's it.
Yeah.
So that was what sold me on getting the model as soon as it was reduced in price, which I did get for a very good, I think, like £10. I have the model of this. It's the only Discovery Klingon ship that I have a model of. All the rest are from the other series. But it's pride of place in the middle of my various Klingon ships. And it looks cool. Although the model, I will say, looks weirdly more metallic, because it's silvery metal looking, whereas the actual one... Yeah, the one on screen looks way more, like you said, wooden and bargy and brown.
Right, and it has like space rust, and you know it's so animalistic. You know, it could be like almost feline. You know, in a way, if you really look at the layout of it. I mean, it's fascinating. It's almost something like from Aliens. You know, so it's interesting. Yeah, like to see the model, you know. The model is fresh and new and boring. But, I mean, I'd still like to see it. But this is the real thing, and it's really out there, because Star Trek is real. Fight me.
Yes. Well, in the words of Rick Emerson, if we ever get to the Star Trek universe, and God willing, one day we will. But, yeah, so I think suffice to say we both love the Klingon Cleave ship.
We love the Cleave ship.
So far, there's been no disagreement, and we're all very positive, so... We'll see when we keep it going. I don't want to jinx anything, but let's see what I've got next on the docket then. The next thing is an episode, actually, weirdly enough. A very random one. Again, not Klingon related, but it just happened to be something I'd rewatched. So it's from Strange New Worlds that we were talking about earlier. And it is episode 2, Children of the Comet. Would you say it's a hit or a miss?
Oh, yeah. This guy. This guy, he's really, really serious. You know, don't mess with his thing, his mob deep or whatever. He's very, very serious. But
did you just apply June logic to that?
In the end, I mean, it was kind of that spiritual thing, right? But this guy, he's serious. Don't mess around with him. He doesn't play.
Yeah, they're like priests that are, you know, protecting the comet or whatever. They call themselves guardians or whatever.
Oh, yeah, guardians, yeah. But he's, I mean, and he's serious too because, like, he means it. You can tell he's not an intentionally mean guy, but you know, he's very serious. This is his religion, as it were. So, I mean, don't get involved. Don't get involved, human thing.
Obviously, it's a comment on kind of religious zealotry and, you know, at what point do you put the value of lives over the top of it. We're talking about, you know, an entire planet, and he's taking it on faith. Pike doesn't want that to happen, which is an interesting thing for the episode to explore, although it doesn't really dive all that deeply into it necessarily. So,
right.
But yeah, what were your overall thoughts?
I like this episode. I like the whole thing about water in the desert. Like, I like that ending. Mm. You know, yes. I love the family with their hands, and I want to go back there and see, because it's sort of like the Genesis effect in a different take. You know, it made life.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me.
That's the thing that kind of, I'm going to go ahead and say it's a soft hit, but for me, the bit that got really weird is the kind of explaining at the end that, oh, the comet did know exactly what was going to happen. It would only have ever... It knew what you were going to do. It was only ever going to bring life. So it was very much kind of like, if you'd had faith, it would have been fine. But that's because it knew the future. And I get how it ties into, like, at this point, you still have Pike like, oh, I know my future. I'm doomed to be in a wheelchair and making bleepy noises.
I don't want to be Pike. I mean, I just don't. I don't want to be Pike. I want to be every captain. I don't want to be Pike. You know, this... it was kind of like Deus Ex Machina at the end, you know. But I liked the whole scene. I liked the costumes of the people in the desert. I wish I could remember their names.
They're barely featured. They only cut back to them once or twice to sort of to emphasize the stakes of, like, this comet might extinct these species.
Right. We don't want them to be extinct because we could tell they love each other. They're loving people. They love their children. Yeah. But I liked that. But, I mean, yeah, it was a...
I've been rewatching a lot of Strange New Worlds, but I think this is the episode as well where Uhura kind of comes into her own, which I really appreciated, because it's where she kind of discovers that the comet, you know, it responds to musical tone or something.
Yeah, that was neat. Go ahead, sweetie, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, because it was at that point you'd kind of, I think you'd already had Uhura say, oh, I'm in Starfleet because I didn't really have anywhere else to go and I don't really know if I want to be here, and you kind of had... I forget who it was. It may have been Spock, just very bluntly, like, well, you know, no disrespect, but a lot of people do want to be here. So if you don't want to be, maybe give up the space to somebody that does. And then in the end, it completely comes around and Spock's like, I will say this, if you did leave, it would be a disservice because you're fantastic at what you do and we could really use somebody with that skill, kind of thing. So I was like, oh, that was kind of the genesis of Uhura as a character that was really nice, as somebody that watches, like, TOS, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I just love how they're developing the characters in the show. They're all so different. And I kind of think it was fascinating to sit there and watch her say, oh, I don't know if this is for me.
Yeah, at first, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's just fascinating. It's honest, it's real. And everybody sort of was taken aback. And that's how life is. You need to be taken aback in discussions. Everybody's not just going to fall in line with what you want.
Yeah. But it also gave the episode and her kind of arc a lot more meaning, because it wasn't a question of, I want to be here because I'm great. And now I'm going to prove to you exactly how great I am. It was kind of like she was nervous and unsure.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kirk's brother was knocked out. And it was very much like, look, you wanted a chance. Our only hope at this point. That's so it. Step up, you know.
That's right. Kirk's brother. I call him Stash Kirk. That's for sure. And, you know, one thing it reminded me of is, I'm old, so I saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind in the theater, and this is clearly an homage to the na 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 na, you know, kind of a thing. Yeah, so I liked that.
One last thing I want to shout out, because it's a tiny moment, but it also kind of does make me laugh, is that when they realize that they're kind of trying to match the tones and everything, and Uhura does it and then asks everyone to join in, and Spock kind of reluctantly does, and then La'an is just like, nope.
Nope. She, and Laan, yeah, she's a serious character. Laan and this Guardian guy should hang out. Like, they're dead serious about stuff. Want to be a fly on a wall for that discussion.
What a thrilling dinner party that would be.
I know. Oh, God.
Just don't bring up comets or Gorn, whatever you
say. Yeah, right.
Well, we've kept it positive because I think I said soft hit and you definitely were on the I would say the page of hit.
It's
yes,
a soft that. Hit. Yeah, it's a soft hit. I'll say that.
Yeah, the ending was a little bit weird for me, but never mind.
I know. It's okay. It's sometimes okay to have those things in a story. It's interesting and it makes you think. I mean, it's, makes you think.
So kind of partly sticking on the Strange New Worlds theme, the next thing is a character, and it is the character of Dr. Joseph Mbenga. Would you say he's a hit or a miss? And I'm talking overall, so we're talking Strange New Worlds and his very brief two appearances in the original series.
Oh, yes, Buck. Oh, I think he's wonderful. I mean, he's a gentle, kind, caring, warm man. Mm. That's how they've played him. He, of course, has his daughter in a transporter. Oh, sorry if that's a spoiler.
That was a season one plot. So come on.
Okay, so where are we? Okay, with that? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Yeah, I like his bedside manner. I just think he's a wonderful actor too. I'd like to see him in other things, but yeah, he's interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I love all the doctors.
I know he only appeared twice, but do you remember seeing the character in the original series?
I remember that he was there. I remember seeing him, but do enlighten us.
Well, I can't really remember that much. I know that he kind of comes into the fray because he's supposed to be an expert specifically in Vulcan physiology. So he has to help treat Spock in one episode. The other one I genuinely can't even remember, but I do know. I remember being, this is going to sound really kind of, you know, oh, you're so pompous. But I remember as a kid watching the original series, I was just impressed that it was a black character where nothing was made of the fact that he was a doctor and he was black. It wasn't like, ooh, this is shocking. How did you get to this position? It was just kind of like, just here, just another doctor, not even going to mention it, you know, full on African name and everything. And I was like, that kind of took me aback as a kid because I was like, huh, it's just perfectly normal by the 23rd century. That's nice.
Yes, let's hope it really is that way in the 23rd century. That will be awesome.
So I liked the character to start with, and when I heard they were casting him in Strange New Worlds, I was intrigued, and I kind of have loved a lot of, if not everything that they've done. I love that he now has a relationship with Pike that we didn't really know about, which kind of stems from Pike traveling to Africa and the like. Mm-hmm. I love, as you said, his bedside manner, the fact that he's a great counterpoint to what we know is going to come with McCoy, because McCoy's got that very, like, he still cares, but he's got that abrasive southern, like, get up and do your job and look after yourself kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas you can't imagine, you know, Mbenga's bedside manner being quite that blunt. And as you said, he's got a richer life. He's got a family thing going on. I'm still very unsure. I won't go into it too much, but I'm very unsure about the new plot they're giving him about, like, traumatization by the Klingon War and stuff.
Right.
Don't love where they're going with that. It feels like they're just looking for a new plot because they did the whole daughter thing and concluded that. But we'll see. I'm the jury's still out on that one. So
But I mean, he's not an ensign, right? He's not an ensign.
Yeah.
So I love knowing where they came from. I love knowing all of that stuff. And right, I mean, I love the Dr. McCoy swagger and all that, but I also love this nice, good, caring man. And if I was going to have somebody as a doctor, he's the one I'd want. Well, I want Phlox. Yeah. Okay, let's just get real. But if it has to be human, then I want it to be him.
Yes, all of the doctors in the Star Trek shows are great when you think about it, though, aren't they?
Yeah, the doctors are awesome. We need to have, like, in 2027, we need to have a doctor episode, you know, one of these things.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I think massive hit. I can't wait to see. I mean, I'm like that with all of the Strange New World characters, but I'm really intrigued to see where this character goes, and I hope he gets a bit more, if anything, to do. I don't want him to become just a background kind of, you know, we need a doctor episode kind of thing. So.
True.
Yeah, fair enough. So I think I've got a couple more things. Everyone's going to be really annoyed because we're probably going to be so positive though.
We just love Star Trek too much.
Next two things we do have are both Klingon related. The first one is an episode, Deep Space Nine, and it is You Are Cordially Invited, aka the Worf Dax wedding episode. Is it a hit or a miss?
There are some cringy moments in this episode. I mean, I guess they're just trying to help bachelorette party thing.
I love that.
I liked that Kira and Odo got to talk finally. But I didn't like the whole Jadzia with the dude. I mean, I know that they had to have that so that Cirilla would walk in and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, but I love, love, love the ending and the beginning of this episode. I love it when, what does Martok say? Magnificent, isn't she? And Sisko's like, if you say so. But the ending of this wedding, it would still give me chills just seeing this right now because it's sincere.
Yeah, it is. And it's very, it handles the mythology and the lore kind of mm-hmm. Klingons and stuff well, whilst also being a great character piece for all of the characters, but especially obviously Worf and Jadzia. Mm-hmm. And I thought you were referring to the bachelor party stuff, not the bachelorette. So I fully love whenever they do little comedy subplots during the middle of drama. And there's something hilarious about like O'Brien and Bashir going through like a Klingon ritual.
Oh,
and them just like, when I get out of this, I'm going to kill Worf.
Because he's hanging, right? Isn't it? The doctor's hanging and he's like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to kill Worf. Yeah, let's go get him. And the whole steaks, right? There was food and Sisko took it. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. But yeah, I remember having this discussion with, again, I can't remember. I think it might have been Rick or it may have been Jeff, where they say, like, normally I wouldn't like something that sets out to be like, it's the wedding episode. But this one does it so well. Particularly, I think it helps it that it's just after they've retaken the station. So you've had all of that, like, super serialized 6-part, how do we get the Dominion back? And we've had to put up with the death of Zial and everything. So now this
is
our reintroduction to it, you know, to normality.
Right. Yeah, so, sure. Yeah. Kind of like here in the United States, a city will have like something horrible happen. And then they all start rooting for the sports fans or the sports teams or something, just so the city can feel something. You know, that's sort of like, I mean, I always make everything about Los Angeles and everything, but I like certain parts of this episode are great. And you're right about the Klingon rituals are interesting. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I like like I said, the idea of the Klingons, you know, slew the gods that created them, but only because they were united under love and whatever. It's like,
no. Oh, the Klingon heart. Yes, the heart. The heart is so strong. Yeah, I am alone. Yeah. Oh, see, that made me see. I just gave myself chills. I'm such a nerd. I'm such a Star Trek nerd.
To this day, no one can oppose the beating of two Klingon hearts. Not even me, man. As Cirilla says. So it's well written. It's brilliant. The characters stuff to do, and it's nice to be back on the station and have a lighthearted moment. You know.
True. So,
I love it.
Alexander. They got married because he was going to be there. Yeah.
He was his Tywheat on.
Ella Tywheat on. Yeah.
Poor Sword bearer, like a best man.
Yeah. I'd say it's a hit. It's not the best episode, but elements are great for me. Yeah.
I think it's one of my favorites. And just as a random side note, both Worf and Dax look hot in the Klingon wedding outfits. So.
The costumes are great. Yeah. Okay. So the costumes are wonderful. The dialogue is wonderful at the beginning and at the end and some in the middle.
Yeah. Oh, and just to mention it, because I always forget this, but I really do love that Jadzia's like, they're trying to make her prove, you know, are you worthy of being in the house? And she's failing at all the rituals and stuff. And then she basically uses her smarts to get in by being like, so I've done some research. It turns out you've been telling everyone you're descended from a princess. And turns out you're not, you know, that's what you wanted to make it look like. But, you know, and she's just, Cirilla's just like, well, checkmate, bitch.
That was cool. And then I appreciate Terry Farrell's hangover acting.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah,
everybody waking up at different parts. I'm like, oh, gosh.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. I love that episode. So one last thing then, and it is, again, Klingon related. It's a ship, and you probably knew it was going to come up at some point if you're a regular viewer / listener. The Klingon D7 battlecruiser, is it a hit or a miss? And again, I'm talking overall, so I'm talking the original series, I'm talking the Discovery Strange New Worlds, which is supposed to be the same thing, and kind of is, you know, just the design overall, hit or a miss.
Just going to make it a hit. I think that it's, I mean, clearly we know what it is, and I love how they moderned it up and gave it some lights and windows. Oh, good. People can, yeah. Things happen on there's life. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm normally a stickler for kind of like sticking to things as established. And I love the D7 design because it's just, again, it's iconic. You can tell it was kind of one of the two things they came up with along with the Enterprise during the original series. Mm-hmm. And I remember having the making of Star Trek book and being fascinated by all of the, I think it was Matt Jeffries or possibly some other designer who came up with sketches and things and how he got to the Klingon D7. And I was like, this is such a cool design. It's just a stroke of absolute genius after you've already had the genius of the Enterprise. I just love it. But then, as I was saying, I probably would have normally been like, oh, don't make any changes. But in the first episode of season 2 of Strange New Worlds, when it reveals that these warp nacelle things that are hanging down open up into disruptor cannons, yes. I was like, I don't even care that that's not like something we're used to. It just looked amazing. It just looked so cool. I was like, yep, as far as I'm concerned, they could always do that now. That was just amazing. So, yeah, I love the D7. I think, again, you can see how it's updated in much the same way as the Enterprise got the refit for the motion picture and everything for the modern one, but it's still very much the same ship, and that design is just so, it's iconic, simple as.
Yeah, that's the best word for it. I'd say iconic. I like that use of that because it really is. I mean, nobody in the world would not know that this has got to have something to do with Star Trek. If it's somebody that, you know, and maybe they don't know it's the Klingons, but they know for sure it's Star Trek.
Well, I mean, they are briefly used by the Romulans in the original.
Yes. Yeah.
Weird. Let's not get back into that again. But yeah, I love this. I love the model design of it and everything. Cool. So, yeah. And when you think, I mean, 1960s and it's still more or less the exact same design that you're using today and it works, that's got to be impressive.
Yeah, and they're smart to design the image to be set up the exact same way. Easy recognition, easy for fans to recognize what they're seeing and go, oh, ooh, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Same
exactly.
Angles, everything. Oh, well, there's a planet and some moon and some nebulas, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, but that's the thing. As I said, it, you know, there's newer techniques and things, but it's still recognizably the same thing that you know and you get the same vibes from it. So, yeah, in much the same way as I think we do with the new Enterprise on Strange New Worlds. Like, it's not the same, and yet it is. We still get the same sense of like, yeah, I can buy it. It's effectively the same thing modernized, you know. So cool. Any other thoughts then on any of that before I move us on?
No, we're good.
Awesome. Yeah. Right, well, that would conclude the incredibly positive hit or miss section, which is probably a good thing for the last episode before we go on a little mid-season break. So we kept it positive. Apologies if you disagree. By all means, feel free to let us know your thoughts respectfully if there's anything you don't.
Exactly. Like, who knew that the Klingons were going to be so positive and cheery? Like, who knew? There's not even
anybody that knows me. Anyone that knows me knows I love all things Klingon, so it was never going to be too negative for me. So, yeah, but anyway, we are going to move on to the next part of the podcast now, which would be the main episode analysis. So without any further ado, we will begin our analysis of Soldiers of the Empire. Before I jump in, I have a little bit of, well, I say a little bit, I have quite a bit of behind-the-scenes information on this episode, but I always like to start with just, Adrian, do you have any kind of general spoiler-free thoughts of this episode? Do you remember the first time you kind of saw it, what you expected of it, and, what did you think now, watching it back?
Well, okay, when I first watched it, I wasn't really sure. I was comfortable inside the ship. I remember thinking it's kind of claustrophobic. I don't know, why is this old guy so grouchy? Like, what are they freaking out about? Jadzia just hit a dude. Okay. But as I've, you know, been more mature and been watching it a long time, like I appreciate the episode a little bit more just for the Klingon mythology background and everything else.
Yeah. Definitely. But it is, it's as I said to you, I think off air, this is the Klingon episode. I knew we were going to be doing this as part of this season because it's an episode where it's entirely Klingon. There's no, you know, there's no disappearing off to the station to see what O'Brien's up to this week or whatever. There's very little of anyone else. It's the crew of the Rotar and it's their, you know, mission, their episode. solid 45 minutes with them. So, whether you like that or not, I think is going to be your ultimate opinion of the episode. If you just don't care about life on a Klingon ship, I'd be
It's not going to be your favorite.
Yeah,
exactly. You don't like seeing close-ups of Klingon beards, then clearly this is not the one for you. Although I kind of would have liked to go back and see if Nog fulfilled his little momentary fantasy of strangling Worf. That would have been cool. That is a funny scene.
I've mentioned already, I always love when they insert a little bit of humor, because I talked about it in the You Are Cordially Invited, and I just loved that scene, that little awkward scene of Nog just like, sirs, do you mind if I just scooch past?
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Eisenberg's comedy timing in that scene was just like, that was genius.
Yeah. We should be able to go back in these episodes and see the closeout. But we needed this Rotaran episode. We needed to see what happens with this crew. And we need to have a ship that we know and care about. And I feel like, you know, this is a way to start it off.
Excuse me. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Cool. Well, I'm going to jump in. Apologies if you want to jump in and, you know, chime in with any thoughts on this. I'm going to read the behind the scenes, because I see it is quite a lot of information, but I think it's interesting. It kind of
Go for it. I want to hear. I'm a fan.
Fair enough. Genesis of the episode and kind of tells you where, you know, what some interesting bits and pieces about it. So the origins of this episode are to be found in a request that Ira Stephen Bear made to Ronald D. Moore. He said, give me Star Trek Klingon, a story that we could do as a Star Trek episode, but with all Klingon characters. As I said, you kind of see that they got that. I'm not going to talk too much about this, because you can go back and watch our review of Barge of the Dead, because the original idea for the episode was that it was going to be basically that episode. The Rotaran was going to eventually encounter the Klingon afterlife and find Moog and get all spiritual, but they basically decided, you know, that's a heck of a lot to try and do, and that was abandoned and later reused for a B'Elanna plot on Voyager. So, again, go back and listen to that episode from earlier in the season for more on that. Of special importance to Ronald D. Moore in this episode was giving each Klingon an individualized personality and look. Of the characterization of the crew of the Rotaran, Moore says, one of them thinks they're cursed, one of them is a female engineer who doesn't want to give up, and then there's the troublemaker who just enjoys making the situation worse in a perverse desire to destroy them all. However, individual physicality was also of importance. On some of the shows where we've had a lot of Klingons on camera, even I get them confused, he said. So we wanted more visual distinction here, and as a result, one was given short cropped hair and one had no sleeves. T'Vana's hair is red, and there was even a blonde Klingon. Which, yeah, I think they did make them look suitably enough diverse that you know who's who, basically. This always fascinated me, because I completely missed this. There's a short scene of Dax pushing some buttons on a control panel. Ronald D. Moore commented Dax was actually sending a message to Ortakin, T'Vana's lover, warning him about the impending mutiny. Ortakin shows up on the bridge a few seconds later with two other armed Klingons. The cutaway to Dax didn't read on camera, and now Ortakin's arrival is a bit mysterious, which I agree with, but now knowing what I know is like, okay, that makes sense now. So, yeah. Now, you can always fill in that gap yourself now, headcanon-wise, I guess. So, this episode is a favourite of the actor J.G. Hertzler, who sees it as solidifying the character of Martok after his return/debut in Purgatory Shadow. Of Ron Moore, who wrote Soldiers of the Empire, Hertzler comments, I'm forever in his debt. He also says of this episode, it had a lot of heart. Although the cast and crew loved this episode and felt it was extremely successful, Ira Stephen Bear was unsatisfied with it. This is an episode that almost made it, he said. LeVar Burton is one of the strongest directors we have when it comes to working with actors, but the casting process was difficult, and I don't think the makeup always helped the actors. None of it went far enough. Bear was especially displeased with how the toughness of Martok's crew was handled. The scene at Quark's really was depressing. They were supposed to be the baddest guys. One of them has teeth around his neck, and people in the bar talk about them like they're bad guys, but they're not badass at all. Throughout the entire show, without a doubt, the toughest man on the ship is Martok, and that totally screwed up the show in my mind. I'm in two minds about that, but okay. Worf becomes a member of the House of Martok in this episode, something which has great implications for the future, as we know. The IKS Rotaran makes its first appearance. It reappeared as Martok's command ship in the episode Sons and Daughters before being replaced by the IKS Chitang in Once More Unto the Breach. But the Rotaran does reappear in Tacking Into the Wind. No stardate is given in this episode, but fascinatingly, Worf makes a combat log on the 53rd day of the year of Kalis 999. So now we know how Klingons measure years. The Klingon war song that you heard up top in this episode was originally from the CD-ROM, Star Trek Klingon, and is made officially canon here. And just for the sake of clarity, I'm going to translate the lyrics. I won't give you the original full Klingon one, although you heard the first verse. But the lyrics in English and with some adaptation translate to "Hear, sons of Kaelis, hear, daughters too. The blood of battle washes clean, the warrior brave and true. We fight, we love, and then we kill. Our lives burn short and bright. Then we die with honor and join our fathers in the Black Fleet, where we battle, forever battling on through the eternal fight." And that's it. That's all I have for the behind the scenes for this episode. So, yeah, interesting things, I think.
That is interesting, especially what was said about the bar scene, because when they walked in and, yeah, they weren't that tough, were they?
I didn't have an issue with them. My biggest issue with that scene is that, again, we look at things with different eyes depending on when we're watching it, but it was kind of like, it was very uncomfortable for me that Odo basically is racial profiling, and he's like the cop of the station, and he's like, "Oh, keep an eye on these Klingons, they're trouble." And I'm like, "They've not done anything."
Yeah, they just strolling in. That's what I'm saying. They weren't that tough and scary. Like, it wasn't like, I love, of course, Obi Andofo, the actor that had that tragic accident, but as Drex, and you know, he in Soldiers of the Empire, like, he is menacing. He walks in and he's mean, and he's like, "Wah, wah, wah." But these guys are just strolling nicely. Yes, there's Cardassian neck bones. Yes, yes. One of them ripped off his sleeves and wants to look like a biker, but okay. But like, Odo did seem to get, but I mean, I'm sure it's because everything that was going on, but still, they're just strolling through.
Yeah, it was a little weird. I didn't think that they weren't intimidating. Like I said, it was more just kind of like, well, give them a chance, you know? I mean, when you're already, you know, watching them like, oh, these guys going on to trouble. But yeah, I know what you mean. It was, I can get what he means in that they didn't look, you know, they weren't the most super scary, like, ooh, what's going to happen?
still important scene, you know, because they're on the station and everything.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, if you're not familiar with how we do things here, we basically, instead of giving just a complete recap of the episode, because that would get boring and hopefully you've watched it, we break our little review into sections like writing and plot, direction, acting, visual and special effects, music and sound, other. Then we give our favorite character moment and line, hear from the audience, and then give our conclusion and score out of 5 Starfleet Deltas. So the first thing I wanted to look at then would be the general writing and the plot of this episode. And Adrian, as the guest, I'm going to jump over to you and say, do you have any thoughts of things you want to start us talking about with regard to the overall plot?
Well, like I mentioned before, I've watched it some more, I actually really like being on the ship. I like seeing how the whole thing operates. I like to see like who's in charge and how it works, and how T'Vanna stood up and to Cornyn, right? And she's like, stations, like they knew something was about to happen. And I like being there. So yeah, we're good.
That's fair enough. Absolutely. Yeah. In terms of the plot, I think this is going to sound, if anybody's been following me this entire season, I'm sorry, because I'm going to sound like a broken record. But this is another example for me of how you can't necessarily say that Star Trek is, you know, what was never serialized. And I know Deep Space Nine gets a lot of credit for being more that, you know, more serialized like that than any of the other ones. But for me, this episode is a very necessary follow-on from In Purgatory Shadow and By Inferno's Light, which was a few episodes beforehand. Mm-hmm. So there's several episodes in between, but I feel like we needed this because, you know, this really is dealing with the consequences of what happened in that Dominion internment camp of Martok having been imprisoned there for so long, losing an eye and developing, you know, almost a fear, you know, mm-hmm. A religious kind of, you know, impressed fear with the Jem'Hadar, and as I said, Worf wanting to give up and then Martok ultimately not letting him, and Worf explaining all that to Sisko, which wasn't even in the episode, but again, I feel like it adds so much more to that when you watch it back now. And to me, I would compare this to, I would say this is like, you know how you have the best of both worlds, then you have the episode Family, which deals with like the aftermath of everything there and how Picard's dealing with it emotionally and stuff. I think this is the equivalent for that two-parter, in that this is the one that deals with how Worf and Martok are, you know, are affected by that.
Agreed. It does show consequences of trauma, the consequences of that internment. And you know, he was there for so long. So, I mean, it does show that. And he did develop almost a Jem'Hadar battle anxiety. Like, he doesn't want to go there.
Yeah. You
know, but no, he needed a wake-up call, and that's what he got. Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, it does start. I like how you said it starts off the story, because the Rotarin is there. I mean, it continues that whole thing. And yeah, I agree.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I do love that idea of the Tovadoc bond, and how Worf kind of, he says there's no kind of human word for it, but I think we can still grasp what he means about the idea of like looking into someone's eyes who can see that you've given up, and then like lending you strength of like, don't, you know?
So, right. Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that's what happens in the end of this, kind of Worf and Martok have that look. And I kind of feel like Worf gave Martok some of his strength in that moment. He had to do that. He had to, you know, either sacrifice himself or, you know, they're so bonded, you know, and that at the end, they just needed that. And he gave him his back in his own way. And Sisko knew what the heck he was talking about. Sisko didn't play around either. He's like, okay, here's your orders, you know, so.
Yeah, I love that about Sisko. He's not even questioning. He's just like, yeah, you're on detached leave to the Rotarin.
Right, exactly. I mean, he knew.
Yeah. At this point, we're heavily into the Dominion War, so I think everybody's just kind of like, yeah, I get it. We're all a bit knackered.
Right. What was that word? Knacker?
A bit tired.
Okay. Sorry.
I think I'm not talking to an English person. Knackered.
Just me taking notes over here. Let me write that down. Yeah. Save that to research for later.
I do like the kind of the slight played for humor of like everybody getting new assignments because Worf and it turns out Dax are leaving. That scene for me got very clunky when it was so obvious when Jadzia's like, oh, let me tell you about life on a Klingon ship. It's actually quite ordered, but only the person below can challenge. And then one of the conditions is if they're seeming cowardly, I'm like, yeah, this is all because we need to know this. And it just feels like exposition dump.
yes. But still, that's okay. Irrelevant, isn't it? I mean, you only have, 48 minutes to get the whole plot going. It's not like it's a five-part series or something of a movies. You know, we got to know right away.
Yeah,
okay, plot dump, fine. Give us some info. That's okay. Info dump.
I feel like it could have been less clunky, maybe, or put in a later part of the episode. But, yeah, it's not the end of the world. Mm-hmm. Again, I do love this idea, which it kind of shocked me that Worf decides not to wear his Klingon baldric because, as he puts it, there's no point because the House of Morg doesn't exist. So why wear, you know, the crest of a house that isn't there? And it gives you that great scene for the humor of Jadzia, like, oh, no, I'm sticking around. It's funnier this way than just telling you. You get a bit of humor. You completely get like where Worf's coming at with this when she's like, oh, isn't that going to be a little awkward not wearing a symbol of a house? And he's like, I don't care. I'm not there to make friends. I'm there to do a job.
And that's exactly what he says when he walks in. Basically, he says, you guys suck and I don't care. We got a mission to do.
Yeah, none of you are worthy of my blood and my life, but I'm here. So.
Basically, I paraphrased it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I do love all that. I love that the Klingons, like, in the same way that Starfleet have that military, like, way of giving command of, like, I stand relieved, sir. Oh, I relieve you. Hand command codes. I love that the Klingons basically do it as, like, a ritual. So it's like, here are the battle records. I pledge our lives to you, and I take your lives as my own as the captain of this. I was like, yeah, they would make it seem like, you know, almost a religious ceremony when it's just basically like, just sit in the captain's chair, get on with it.
Yeah. No, it has to. It's very ritualized. And I'm sure that's, you know, exactly how it has to be. Chain of command, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you think, because this is obviously a few of my notes kind of feed into this, but what do you think of this idea that the Rotarin crew are basically depressed and demoralized? They're convinced in some cases that the ship is cursed. Some of them are, you know, giving that spiel about how the Jem'Hadar are better because they're soulless creatures and they don't fight for anything, so they don't have to worry about honor, and that's, you know, that's what makes them stronger and to be afraid.
That's an interesting thing to think about, but the only thing, this is just how my mind works, I'm like, well, what happened to the previous commanding officer of the Rotarin? Like,
good question that I literally never once considered, actually.
I was like, well, what happened to this guy? We never hear about him. Like, did he get put out in the airlock? Like, before, like, what happened?
Well, no, because if he got killed by one of the crew, then they would be in command. So
I know, that's why I didn't.
The only thing that would make sense, which I've literally never thought about until you said it, the only thing that makes sense would be that the previous commanding officer was killed in battle. And again, maybe right? That's why they're like, well, we're cursed because even our captain got killed, you know.
Something, yeah. But I was thinking, well, no, you know, I'm pretty sure that Leskit just put him out of airlock. And so then they needed Martok and they didn't. They're kind of sad that they got Martok.
Well, seeing that, I mean, it's the Klingons. Maybe they literally just transferred him somewhere. You know, he was half decent and they were like, don't go on that cursed bird of prey. Come over here to this great, glorious battle cruiser. You know?
That's true.
Well,
but I mean, the High Command.
Martok, you've been gone for a while.
Right. That's funny. Well, poor Martok. He had to go through so much.
I do like this idea because it's very, it doesn't seem like it might be the case when you've lived life. You realize, though, that these tensions just erupt and eventually just burn into fighting each other. And even though it's got nothing to do with that, I really appreciate that scene because it's like, it's not even about what's being said. He is like offended about, oh, the Jem'Hadar are better than us, but such and such has no honor and whatever else. And I'm like, but it's not about that. It's just like literally this one guy's mouthing off and this other guy's like, ooh, I now have an excuse to just punch you because you're so tense. And I'm like, yep, I've been in situations like that, you know.
Right. Yeah. But the guy that finally blew his lid was Cornyn, right? And he was the one always like kept in the dark shadows. Like he was always supposed to kind of be an unknown element, I always feel like, because I mean he was just kind of a dark, you know, darkness exudes from him and he finally just blew up at this loudmouth guy.
I was hurt when it comes to that character because I know the actor, Rick Worthy, who plays him. Mm-hmm. And I recognized him as being one of the Equinox crew from Voyager. I couldn't take him seriously as that character because even through the makeup, I was like, you're just Ensign What's-His-Face.
Yeah. That's such a good Voyager episode, of course. Now I want to go watch that, you know.
We're talking about Klingons, damn it.
My poor brain. Now I'm thinking about the Equinox. Oh, what a darkness. Okay. But we needed to have that. We needed to have that, you know. And it needs to show that Jadzia needs to go to Worf and say, you're not paying attention because you care about Martok. And Martok is having this problem. And you need to get your act together and take a look around at your team. This is your crew. You know, you need to see what you're not looking. Open your eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. I was just going to say that because I think it's kind of the episode isn't shy of pointing out that Worf is blindly just following Martok because of the bond they have. And it's a mistake. So I think that's another good reason why you have Jadzia there. She gives you that outside perspective, but also she really has to be the one to say to Worf to like basically metaphorically shake him and be like, open your flipping eyes, man.
Right. Exactly. Because she's so experienced with all of her other hosts and Curzon's knowledge of the Klingons. But it's interesting to me because Worf was in the internment camp with Martok and he still wants to protect him in a way. And it takes this experienced woman who knows so much, who he loves and trusts, this scientist, you know, this warrior scientist person who loves him to bring him back to reality. And he has to look around and become the Klingon he's always supposed to be. He's not just, you know, Starfleet. He has to reach down into himself and do something about Martok and to save the ship and the crew. Yeah.
I think as well, though, there's a very brief scene, which is a perfect example of, it's the opposite of what I was saying earlier about clunky exposition, because there's a great scene which kind of clues you in that Jadzia knows her stuff when it comes to Klingon, you know, culture and law. And it's when she goes into the mess hall and just literally throws the guy off her chair and says, like, look, maybe you didn't see the crew manifest. This is my chair. You go down there where you belong and stop being a jerk.
Yeah. Right. Well, I love how she calls it a garbage scow. Like, she's like, first officer on this garbage scow. And then she shows them that she knows her gawk. It's barely
It's
moving.
Not very fresh. Yeah.
Right, it's not fresh. And then she's like, well, I mean, maybe it'll go with some blood wine. And they all like,
I brought some blood wine from the station. Right. I would never insult someone that brought me blood wine. But then it turns out that was a mistake because they all got drunk and fall.
Damn, drunken Klingons. Never trust a ship full of drunken Klingons. You know what I mean? Unless they're happy and they're singing victory songs. Then it's okay.
Oh, but I love that as well because I love the way that they use the Klingon Warriors Anthem, whatever you want to call it, to literally emphasize where the status of the ship is and the crew is on the ship. Because it's when they first start, You know, yeah. when they first taken command and they're mm-hmm. singing it, Worf and Martok are singing it. None of the crew are joining in except maybe one or two very half-arsed. They don't really care. And then at the very end, when kind of normality's been restored and Martok's got his glory and his honor back, they're loudly like, yes. oh, we've done it. We had a success. Yay.
Yes.
So, yeah. I love that. You know, again, simple economical storytelling, but it gets your point across and does a good job, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I do want to quickly talk about this idea that Worf does for Martok, that he does challenge him, but Worf, it's quite apparent that he doesn't really want to take the captaincy. He's mm-hmm. doing it for Martok. Mm-hmm. And it is, to me, it's another example of, like, one of the reasons I love Worf as a character is that even if it's not the most obvious or the easiest way, he will always do what's actually the most honorable thing to do. Yeah. So in this instance, the Klingons might look down on him and be like, oh, why would you want to lose? That's dishonorable, cowardly. And it's like, no, it's the more honorable thing would be that he wanted to restore the honor of someone. And he even says at the end, you did the same for me once. You saved my life, so I had to do the same for you. So I love that. And I love that Jack Dax's response perfectly to that is, sometimes I know why I love you. It's like, yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So, they really are. They really do know each other. They really know each other very well. And I agree. I just love the Martok-Worf relationship.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and then to cement that with Martok literally offering Worf acceptance into his house. Such a sweet moment. If somebody that's been following these characters for so long, it's so important and such a sweet moment. And you're just kind of like, oh,
wow, really Worf
finally found
really
a place
is.
To go.
Yeah, that's really, really touching. I mean, you just can't watch it enough. It's a great, great scene.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was all the notes I had on the writing and the plot. So did you have anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I mostly said everything with my comments.
Cool. Well, the next thing I want to look at was the acting in the episode. So obviously the main sort of thing that we should talk about would be Michael Dorn as Worf. So what did you think of him in this episode?
Yes, very strong. Michael Dorn, very strong. So many different directions that he has to go. Very focused, very good acting. Yeah. Good job, Michael Dorn.
I agree. I think he's very good at showing Worf's affection towards Martok without it being over the top or without it being worn on his sleeve, I guess. And he's always good at displaying Worf's kind of like Klingon cultural pride, even as somebody that's torn between Klingons and Starfleet or whatever else. So you get a real sense that he's carrying a lot of this weight on his shoulders, I think.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, it's true. I mean, he really does carry it. And he understands people. He understands other people. And it really shines here. You know, he understands his wife. He understands Jadzia. He understands Martok.
Yeah. But you do get the sense as well, if you've been watching for a long time, that Martok is finally a Klingon that he's able to bond with. Because he's only ever really bonded with, like, humans or, mm-hmm. you know, members of other species, Trill, mm-hmm. whatever. And this is the first time he's, like, a Klingon that I can genuinely, you know, because he's never really known his Klingon family. His father died when he was born, basically, you know.
Right.
He didn't spend that much time with his brother. And this is just finally, like, somebody who's an actual Klingon, you know.
Yes, an actual honorable Klingon, too, because he knows the story of Doras. And he knows the story of, why can't I think of him right now? You know, the leader, Gowron.
Oh, Gowron.
Yeah, he knows about Gowron. He knows all about all these things. And Martok is different, isn't he? Martok is just different. He is the epitome of what you want in a warrior.
Yeah.
A mentor.
Well, exactly. I mean,
he's not treacherous.
The first time I watched this, I think I was surprised at the ending where he's like, he's not upset at Worf for challenging him or anything. And he even sees what he did and was like, I saw what you did. How did you know I wouldn't kill you? And Worf's like, I didn't, but I owed you one. And then, like I said, the fact that regardless of all of this, you know, you've been dishonored, you've been discommendated 1,000 times. I don't care. I want you in my house as a Klingon and as a brother. And it's like, oh, awesome. You finally found somebody to bond with, you know? So, yeah, I love that. And I think J.G. Hertzler plays that really well as well. Because, again, he has a journey in this episode from, like, cowardly, but I don't want to show it, to I'll show a little bit to Worf, to like, thank you so much, I now am back to being a Klingon and I'm welcoming you into my house.
He plus, you know, Martok needs that too. Martok needs a buddy, a pal, another honorable person. Why not bring an honorable person into your family? Because we don't know where Drex is. We don't know what's going on with this kid. So, I mean, Martok needs somebody like Worf and his family.
Absolutely, definitely. And so then that deals with the two Klingon characters. I have to ask about Terry Farrell next as Dax. What did you think of her?
Yeah, she really got to show some range, didn't she? She got to be funny. She got to be touching. She got to be tough. She got to show her knowledge. I really liked that.
Yeah, I love that she's just able to... She's never portrayed as anything less than just strong and capable, and she can hold her own even with the Klingons, like I said. You know, she basically... There's one scene that I've phrased it really badly, but it's effectively like she gets called a whore because she's like dating Worf or whatever. And she effectively calls the guy an incel back, like, oh, just because you've never, you know, just because you've never had sex or whatever, right. You're virgin.
Yeah. No, she says something like, during this trip, my bed is as empty as yours, Leskin. Right. That's the guy.
Exactly,
and that's the old dude. You know, it's funny because you're supposed to like honor your elders and blah, blah, but he's being such a clown the whole thing that she finally puts him in his place.
He absolutely. And I love that, like, in the middle of the fight, when anybody else would be like not knowing what to do or agonizing over it, she just literally just straight up phases the guy. Just no questioning it whatsoever, no moment of hesitation, just zap, calm down. Yeah. I love awesome. It. And I've mentioned already, I think Cornan was good at that depressed, gloomy menace that you mentioned, but I was distracted by the actor, unfortunately. And I wish I'd looked up this actress's name, but I didn't. And you know what I mean if I say the woman, the female Klingon?
T'Vanna?
It's so good because...
Yeah,
T'Vanna. That's the actor.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'll forget to say this.
No.
Say it now. I feel like we're supposed to like her right away because she bonds over the Curzon and her mom. You know, I think we're supposed to like her and trust her. And that helped me in this episode because some of the others were so treacherous.
Yeah,
she's
the necessary kind
sunshine.
Of friend of Dax.
She's a little sunshine, and plus she's serious, and she's kind of I guess she's in charge of them because she tells them what to do. So of course,
That's what I was going to say. I think she's also a great sort of counterpart to Dax. Well, not even it's a similarity to Dax in that she also stands up for herself in that moment that you mentioned earlier. It's really good when they're basically trying to push back and she's like, station,
right.
I'm not taking any crap from you.
Not today, baby. You go sit down. I got you, but you go sit down.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. I love that. I do. I always love a strong woman, even if she's a Klingon. So
I thought good acting. I always feel like I wish there were a bunch of outtakes because you know that those characters have fun messing up in those scenes and singing the song and all that stuff. You know there's some good ones because they're all kind of like all cramped on a, you know, you wonder like how many days did they have to be on that set. This is just how my brain works, and you know they all became friends and they got to sing and all that stuff, and I wish I was there. I want to go there. I want to go on the Retiran.
I don't want to be on a Klingon Bird of Prey. I think they get away with a lot because it's supposed deliberately to be cramped and look crappy, but I was like, my word, the lighting and everything in here is so dull and it looks cramped. And if it wasn't for the fact that you've literally said it's supposed to be like that, I would be like, this is just a cheap set because it's so small and there's nothing really to it. And I was like, yeah, you get away with it because in story terms it's meant to be, but my word, it does really look like you'd hate to be there. I would just literally walk onto a Klingon ship and be like, somebody turn the bloody lights on for a start.
Well, I mean, they don't spend their money there, do they? They have to have all that weapons. It's like a submarine. You're not going to make it fancy and pretty. A submarine needs to keep you alive. So, I mean.
Do its functional.
It has to be, right. Plus, they need all their batlets and stuff. So that's where they spend their money. They don't spend it on fresh cock, that's for sure.
Well, not on that ship, they bloody don't. They're cursed. So, yeah, no, that's great. So the next thing I was going to move on to then would be the direction. And I only literally have like four notes because, again, TV direction is kind of difficult to pin down because it's very much, you know, work for hire. But this is a LeVar Burton episode, so I think there is a lot of good stuff that he brings as a great director, as we mentioned. Throwing it over to you, Adrienne, what did you notice anything about the direction or anything you wanted to shout out?
No, I don't. I know it's LeVar Burton, but I mean, I think probably a lot of the takes between the characters and to show like how much they care about each other or how much they hate each other. I think that that shows his expertise.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's all in the little glances and the moments, and it's expertly built up tension that even if you're not consciously aware of it, you're feeling tense because you know something's about to go down, and mm-hmm. that's, again, that's good direction that's helping you, like, oh, where's the fight going to come from kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think the fight scenes when they happen are all very well staged, whether it be the one in the Klingon mess hall or even, you know, Jadzia coming in, throwing that guy off the chair. But especially the fight between Worf and Martok, I was super impressed by, particularly when you think that they're using tiny Ickle duck tag knives. Like, they're not using batlets or anything. They're using little knives, and you've got to get very close quarters. And it never looks like they are. If you've ever seen people try and fight with little knives, it often looks shocking because there's not a lot you can do. But this one, I was like, this is actually really well done. It's staged well. Everyone's, you know, doing the right moves and everything. Nobody looks like they're not trying. And obviously we know the resolution is, you know, a wolf gets stabbed.
So. Right. Yeah. In just the right place.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, oh, good. All he had to do was point and say, hey, remember, right here, right here. Okay.
There's a couple of things like that, that if you want to be nitpicky, there's a couple of things that are very convenient. And that's one of them. And the other one is just, I think I've made a note at somewhere earlier where I was like, yeah, we meet the female Klingon who's a friend, and of course she's in a relationship with the other guy. Of course two of these people on this cursed ship are dating, because sure, we need even more drama, you
know? Well, I mean, I think that was supposed to be probably because he'll come and say, you know, if there's going to be a mutiny, they're on the same side. I mean, I guess
that, yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. That, it helps with that for sure.
Yeah, it does.
Awesome. So do you have any kind of related, but do you have any thoughts on the kind of special effects or the visual effects of the episode?
Oh, I thought it was well done. I love, I mean, you know, I just like the episode. I love the ship, and it didn't seem like there was too many like blasting and everything, like, which is what I like to see, how they set up the munitions to blast and et cetera. But yeah, I liked it.
Awesome. Yeah, I think the same. I love the design of the Klingon ships, the two that we see here, and even the Jem'Hadar. I always call it the Jem'Hadar cockroach because that's what it kind of looks like. The
it
little
attack. Does. To me, it looks like a scarab, like an Egyptian scarab.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like the scarabs.
Yeah, the beetle ship. Absolutely.
Oh, that'll work. Beetle ship. Yeah. I like it.
It's a great design, though, and the ships all look amazing because, I mean, you know, at this point, it's the late 90s, of course they do. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I will say, on a non-visual effects level, I do think some of the Klingon costumes look a little bit flimsy, and I think that might feed into the argument of, like, they don't look as intimidating because it doesn't look so much like armor as it should, and it's very, like, yeah, that looks like you're just wearing, you know, a very bad cosplay that looks soft and spongy, I guess. Which is a shame because it's not intimidating.
Right.
But, you know, I get it. It's a TV budget. You've got to do what you can, and you've got to make them all look different as well. Yeah, so, yeah.
You have to make them look different. And you also kind of, they're not, you know, their morale is low. So they're not wearing their best.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
They're just sort of like, I'm going to take off my armor, Tabby. We're cursed anyways. What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. Right. On a sort of semi-related costume note, though, I did have one question. Why does Jadzia wear her Starfleet uniform throughout the episode? She's not like an attaché from Starfleet. She's serving on the crew. So as Worf does, shouldn't she be in like the Klingon uniform?
Yeah, because didn't she wear Klingon stuff when she went with Kor and them, and they were...
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. That's a good point. We need to write in.
I think it was probably more just like we want to feature something that looks Starfleet in the episode, and it could have been solved with a quick line of, like, I'm serving as the science officer, but officially I'm, like, I'm an attaché to Starfleet to see what's going on in this mission as our allies or whatever. But yeah, anyway, it's such a nitpick, but I was just kind of like, about halfway through, I was kind of like, yeah, she stands out because she's in uniform. Hang on, why is she in uniform again? And not only in uniform, she changes because it gets covered in blood into the same uniform.
Oh, that's funny. Now I have to rewatch it again to see.
You may have more on this than me from the next section, because I have literally nothing except I do like the Warriors anthem. So do you have any other thoughts on the music and the sound in the episode?
No, I love, I mean, I always talk about the music, like the intimidating sound that they make when something doom, the sound of doom and everything. This has real good music in it. And I love the singing at the end, especially. Definitely.
Yeah. I think it's, I hadn't noted this, but I kind of thought of it as you were mentioning it. It kind of feeds into the Klingon, you know, tense submarine atmosphere, because it's often just quiet, or you hear the odd little background slight clang or whatever. And it's kind of like, this isn't a kind of happy Starfleet, you know, talking in the background, lots of bleeping noises. It's like deathly silence and then the odd clang of metal. And you're like, ooh, oh, it's tense on here. So, yeah.
This is in the strange new world and we're having yummy food in the captain's quarters. I mean, this is really serious. Because, you know, Martok is not present on the bridge a lot of the time because he's trying to recover from his trauma and you know, he's trying to let Worf bond with the crew or whatever. But that's part of it. You know, they're just not disciplined and they're finding their feet and going in. So yeah, it's very claustrophobic and there's no captain.
I think Martok knows exactly what he's doing. That's the thing. I think he would never admit to being afraid, but I think the reason that he's never really on the bridge and holed up in his quarters or ready room or whatever is because he kind of knows, and he knows that he would, you know, be threatened and would be called out. But he also, he's kind of almost manipulating Worf because he knows that he owes him one and he would kind of believe him. So he kind of justifies him. He gives him the clarity he needs of like, oh, look, Worf, I'm just saying that for this reason, don't you understand? And knowing full well that Worf's going to be like, I guess, okay. You know?
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's just about trust. Martok needed to bring aboard someone he trusted and that trusted him and has honor. I mean, that's exactly why he did that. And Jadzia, exactly, of course. Yeah. I mean, I think that was brilliant.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. So do you have any other thoughts, or can we move to our favorite character moment and line in the episode?
Yeah, let's go.
Awesome.
A spark analysis.
Well, you're the guest, so I always go to the guest first. So who is your favorite character, first of all, in this episode?
Well, it was a place for Worf to shine, to show leadership. In the end, you know, to make those hard decisions. But of course, I go with Martok just because I love him. And great. Jadzia had her moments, but she has so many. So I'm going to give this one to Michael Dorn and his acting.
Oh, you said Martok. So you changed your mind.
Oh, well, no, I love Martok is my favorite. Oh, what are we doing? Character or acting? We're doing
character.
Okay. Okay.
Well, that's kind of interchangeable, I guess.
Martok is my favorite character.
Fair enough. I'll go the I do already have this written down, but I would go the opposite way and I would say Worf for the reasons that I mentioned, that I always love when it's like it shows how honorable he is in sometimes unusual or surprising ways. And again, he gets the actual depth of decompressing from that internment camp and having to be the one that stands up for Martok and allows himself to be, you know, knocked down a peg and hurt and whatever because he feels he owes him. And then it's nice to finally see, because we've put up with Worf being knocked down and still getting nothing for it. It's nice to see him actually get rewarded for that at the end of this episode by getting a house back. So instead of it being like, Worf, you were honorable and you stood up for us, but we're kicking you out and your father's been dishonored. Oh, come on. Give him a break.
I know. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So, yeah, one Martok and one Worf. And what was your favorite moment or scene in the episode?
It's at the very end when Martok brings in, you know, offers him to join the strength of the House of Martok. I mean, that was touching, best scene. Yeah, so important for the whole storyline of both these Klingon warriors.
Yeah, I almost went with that, but in the end, I went with the actual climactic fight. So I say, I think the fight scene itself was so well choreographed and staged.
It was.
Looked fully believable, and as I said, culminating in Worf. Yeah. You kind of knew Worf didn't lose. He kind of let himself kind of take the hit. And so culminating with that and then with Jadzia's kind of, I know why I love you. You did a great thing here kind of thing is so sweet as well.
And the funny thing to think of is in the moment, you know, Martok's like, okay, now I have to tell Sirella that I just brought Worf into the family. Okay, let's see. Let me get some blood wine over here. And maybe she wants a new targ. Gotta butter her up.
Gonna be like, look, I am the king in this house, and what? And you have every right to know, my queen.
Yeah, because when you think of like how she, when she came and we first meet her, she's way above him. Like she's walking off the, she's walking off the ship, and Martok and Sisko are down below, and she just looks down at them. You know what I mean? Like, you know she's in charge.
Well, so. On her first words in that episode, she literally walks in, and the first thing she says after not seeing Martok for like months, if not years, she just looks down and goes, "You've gotten fat."
And your hair is gray. Oh, yeah. He plays it off so well. Oh,
his great response of like, "I shall endeavor to die this year, if possible."
Yeah. Oh.
Love it. Yep. Gotta love Klingon arguments, but yeah, fair enough. So what is your favorite line then in the episode?
I kind of like when I didn't write it down, but I'm confusing my. Let me think of it. I'm confusing my episodes. Go ahead with yours.
I'll give you mine first then, just to give you time to think, because I know sometimes you get caught off guard. So mine is a line from Martok, which I think perfectly sums up, without explicitly saying it, where his mental state is. It's quite a long one, but it's just when he basically says, "They are soulless creatures, Worf, fighting for no goal, no purpose except to serve the Founders. They take no pleasure in what they do. Nothing is glorified, nothing affirmed. To the Jem'Hadar, we are nothing more than targets to be destroyed. I must not allow them to destroy us, Worf. I must," and then just gets cut off, because I was like, that is exactly where it all comes to a head, and you kind of realize he's afraid, but he's justifiably like, you know, this isn't just cowardice. This is like, he's afraid because he senses like, yeah, there's no glory, no. And again, it feeds into that great line earlier about the Cardassians, you can respect, everything's a game. They were always chasing ghosts and whatever. And it was an honor to fight them. Whereas the Jem'Hadar, there's just nothing there.
Yeah. So, yeah. I love that, because he's also exposing his vulnerability to Worf. He's confessing, he's confiding. It's not something that you would expect, and that's a great
not from
line.
A Klingon, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't, but it kind of shows that he did really get traumatized and when he was there battling everybody. But I'm just gonna go with how we learn about Worf's moment of weakness, because when you watch those episodes and you see Worf getting beat to a pulp by the different Jem'Hadar soldiers, I'm going to go with what he said to Sisko about his moment. Tobak Dok. Yeah, that's right. Not Chadi.
Sorry, I was distracted because I was just remembering, like, completely counter to what everybody says in this episode about the Jem'Hadar. I really love that moment in those episodes, which I know we're not talking about, but when Worf's just constantly getting back up, even though he's getting beaten to absolutely a pulp. Yes. And then the Jem'Hadar out of nowhere just goes, "I yield. I can't defeat this Klingon. All I can do is kill him."
And that no longer holds my interest. That's right, because he sees and he gets like this little tinge for a moment. Now, hold on. He's real. He's going to fight us, and then he's going to die. Yeah. I want to go watch those episodes right now, of course.
I can kill him, but I'll never have broken his spirit.
Yeah, that's
so really,
good.
Who will
yeah.
have won, you know?
Yeah. I used to know the names of all my favorite Jem'Hadar, like Ometaclan.
They all have names like Ramataclan and Ometaclan and Janakaclan.
They're four syllables.
Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan. Oh. Well, that's funny. That's
you mean
funny.
To tell me there's not a Jem'Hadar called Chaka Chaka Khan?
Oh, God. Maybe someone will tell us what we want to do. No, but
I'm
going
to have to Photoshop that at some point now.
Yeah, we do. But I used to know the names of all my favorites. Now I have to go back and watch all of Deep Space Nine. It's just the best. It's the best podcast to do. It just motivates me to sit and watch more Star Trek.
Always. That's what we're here for. Awesome. Well, I will come back to us for our conclusion and score out of 5. But first, I have to go to the audience response, which we do have a few of. So I will do what I geekily call the subspace communications section.
Incoming transmission.
Before I jump into the thoughts from people in our Facebook groups and things, I did note that upon researching this episode, in 2016, the Hollywood Reporter ranked this episode 10th in their best episodes of Deep Space Nine list. So top 10. Yay.
Wow, I didn't know that. Well done.
I didn't either, but yeah, well done. Hollywood Reporter going for it there, blaming it. Right, so. On Twitter, we got one response from Thomas Labanik, who says, "I enjoyed it. I liked the plot. I enjoyed getting to see more of Klingon ship life and Worf helping Martok get his mojo back." Yep, fully. Great. These are all from the Facebook groups now. Lynn N. Ian Murdoch says, I really liked the situation Worf found himself in, his leader suffering paralyzing fear. He must overcome his loyalty to the man and do the greater good. He challenges him and could take him, but lets him win when he realizes his fear has passed, saving his honor. Luckily, Worf lives and Martok honors his help by making him part of his family. Jadzia was obviously the woman behind her man, helping him become the best he could be. Yeah, these are all fair points, I think. Tom Roylance, as you actually put a picture of the Klingons entering the bar, was just the screenshot that I used. And he says, the dude on the left, the costume department should be ashamed for putting that miserable excuse of a Klingon uniform on screen. And what's with the hair? Westmore must have been out sick that week.
That's funny.
A little more harsh than I was, but I see-ish where you're coming from. Ryan Levenger says, Klingon episodes are always fun, and this one was no exception. I love to see Worf struggle with the meaning of honor and how to live it out. It was also fun seeing life in a Klingon ship, plus Jadzia letting her inner Klingon out. Finally, the Klingon battle song was so much fun. Alternate episode title, How Martok Got His Groove Back.
That's a good one.
Absolutely. And finally, Geo Klingon Hutchinson, a great name, says, it's good to see the internal politics on the ship when things are not well, a ship being cursed like that. Worf and Martok. Worf was covering for Martok, his cowardly actions from PTSD, and he was scared of the Dominion. And in the end, Worf had to bring Martok back to the present by challenging his command and letting him win and showing he's a worthy commander. Yeah, absolutely. Just a few thoughts on this episode, as I say. So, but if you were listening along, you may have been prompted to go back and watch it. It's only 45 minutes, so give it another look. And we finally come to our conclusion and our score out of 5. And Adrienne, as the guest, are you happy if we come to you first?
Yes. I'm giving this a 4.3.
Oh, wow. Very specific. And any particular reasons why?
It just works for my brain.
So 4.3 is a very high score. So, yeah, bear with me. I'm just trying to get my ducks in a row here. So, yeah, my conclusion is quite long and pompous, as it always is. So apologies after Adrian's very succinct way of putting it. I said this was a long overdue insight into both the Klingons and the characters of Worf and Martok. In yet another example of serialized storytelling, this is the necessary coda to In Purgatory Shadow and By Inferno's Light. Mm-hmm. For a Klingon episode, it's a little bit tame. The crew seem a bit less intimidating than they probably should and tolerate Martok far longer than is strictly believable. But their status as beaten down, depressed pessimists may excuse this. It's also not very believably Klingon, though. That said, the acting is great, particularly from the key trio of Hertzler, Dorn, and Farrell. As a fan of Worf, I probably like this episode a little more than some because of its importance to his character and continuing arc. But I would understand DS9 fans feeling a bit shortchanged at the lack of anything for the majority of the cast to do. For me, it's an interesting diversion to a culture that interests me, with some pivotal character moments really selling the somewhat flimsy story. It's these moments that give me the sense of Trek pride in viewing honorable heroic acts and true bonding, a mild success, or should I say, Kapla. And I give it 3.5 out of 5.
Nice. Love it.
So if we add those scores together and share them by 2, since there's 2 of us, Soldiers of the Empire comes out with a final score of 3.9 out of 5. So just outside of number 4 out of 5. So yeah, very good. I think suffice to say we can say that's a hit and recommended. So awesome. Have you enjoyed being able to rewatch the episode with me this week?
Yeah, it's really fun to do a deep dive like this. I like doing it with books, but that takes longer. But I like being able to focus on an episode and just write my own notes and draw about everything from my Star Trek experience and do something like this. So this was a great one for that. Thank you so much. That's for the invite.
Awesome. No, thank you for jumping in. You had like a day and you came with all of your own like takes on it, your thoughts and opinions and your notes, and you did the work. So I can't be I couldn't be happier and couldn't be more grateful.
Luckily I know the episode and it was a one of my favorite series, of course, Deep Space Nine, so we're always safe there.
awesome. All I can do is say thank you so much again. You will be hearing Adrienne again, so stay tuned. Yay. To the podcast. As I said, we're on a little break now, but we're hoping to come back with a top 10 in a few weeks and then resume the remaining 5 episodes of this season, looking at Klingon episodes and a movie. Which one could it be? I think we all probably know. So join us for that later in the year, and keep an eye on our socials and everything in the meantime. You can find all our links via the link trees and various things that are in the episode description. Adrienne, do you have anywhere people can find you that you'd like to shout out?
Yes, I am still on Twitter, that toppling bird up there. Jeez. But I am AL Park Tucker 2. And sorry about the politics.
Yeah, and you can always join our Discord, which I think is growing a little bit as things develop. And as I said, we're on other sites. Twitter is kind of falling apart worse than the Rotaran before Marchok took his groove back. So we can be found on Mastodon, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere. So keep an eye on our link tree in the description for that. Awesome. And join us again. As I said, the next thing that you will probably be seeing from us will hopefully be a top 10, which I can now reveal will be top 10 alien spaceships. Ooh. We've done our top 10 Starfleet, so we're looking at the top 10 alien. And it feeds into this series that will basically be classed as an episode of it, because I have a feeling at least one or two Klingon ships might turn up in that list. So we'll wait and see. And
yes, they will. If I have anything to do with it.
Well, you'll be on it, don't worry. So there you go. So, all that remains is for me to say thanks again, Adrienne. Thank you for joining us for this first half of the season, if you have. Do always, like, share, spread the word around, and keep enjoying Star Trek. And, we'll see you back here. In the meantime, though, do remember, we are Starfleet. Live long and prosper. Kapla!
Live long and prosper.
Kapla!
You have been listening to the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Created, produced, and edited by Michael Wilson. Additional material produced by DK. Music by Timeless Journey. More information can be found at soundcloud.com/Timeless Journey. The Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast is based on an idea by Michael Wilson and Will Templar. Follow the podcast on Instagram at Home Star Trek Podcast. Or look for the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast under Facebook groups. Links to all our social media accounts and more are in this episode's description. This podcast is available on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Just look for Silver Screen Hit or Miss Star Trek. This has been a Mike's Podcast production, copyright 2022. Thank you for listening.